Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, blood, sweat, and data. By CaliforniaTriathlon.org, five great 2019 races, including Viking Dash Trail Run LA, coming up on April 7th. By our Challenge Athletes Foundation, this last year we sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million to keep challenge athletes in the game of life through sport. To help out, go to challengeathletes.org. You can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Speaking of endurance, one of the greatest running backs of all time, 8,889 rushing yards, 4,911 yards receiving, 73 TDs, three Super Bowl rings, four-time Pro Bowler, the first running back with 1,000 yards receiving, 1,000 yards rushing in the same season, and first running back to score three touchdowns in a Super Bowl. Plus, he's a longtime runner. His name is Roger Craig. Roger, how the heck are you doing?
Great to be on your show, Bob, man. This is awesome.
Roger, you are the best. I appreciate you taking time. So when you first come out of college and you end up with the 49ers, did you have any idea how good that team was going to be?
I saw them two years before them, you know, when they won the Super Bowl when I was going to school in Nebraska. And they won the Super Bowl, and then the next year they didn't win the Super Bowl. I read this quote in Sports Illustrated saying the 49ers coach was interested in me. And the guy who basically told him about me was John Gruden's father.
Oh, that
John
is
Gruden's
funny.
Father was the scout for Bill Walsh. And so he liked my story that what I did my senior year at Nebraska. So basically, my junior year, I was preseason All-American. Going to my senior year, you know, I was All-Conference. Had some great yards against Florida State, like 240 yards against them, the previous year. And then Coach Osborne moved me to fullback. And so I'm a team guy, so I'm like, hey, if it's going to help our team win, I'll play fullback. I gave up my running back position to play fullback to block for Mike Rozier.
Who was great.
And it went on and won the Heisman after I left.
Yeah.
but John Gruden heard about that story, and he told Bill Walsh, and next thing you know, I was reading the Sports Illustrated that the 49ers entry. I'm like, wow, I only had like 500-600 yards rushing. Why do they want me to be their number one pick? You know, so it's kind of scared me because I'm like, shoot, I got to learn how to catch the ball now. So I started catching 100 passes a day, and I was just, oh my gosh, man, I was freaking out, you know. And then, you know, when the draft came around, I got this call from Bill Walsh, and here I am.
And you were what, like the 49th selection or something?
Yeah. How crazy! And the 49th selection, 49er. How awesome is that?
That was meant to be.
But cool. But check this out. Yeah. When I was in high school, I wore 49. I swear to God, I'll text you. I'll text you a picture of it.
That is the funniest thing. See
me in my 49er jersey. A 49. That was my number. 49.
I love that. and what's funny in high school, you were a runner, right? In second, Iowa State track and field, track 100 hurdle, 110 hurdles, 400 hurdles.
I ran the 110 hurdles and the 400 meter hurdles. I like track more than football. You know, I ran track at Nebraska as well. But track was something that I really loved, and I kind of fell into football. My older brother was way better athlete than I was. He was the third best running back coming out of high school. It was Elvis Peacock, Terry Miller, and then it was my brother.
Wow.
And Terry Miller played for Oklahoma State, and then Elvis Peacock played for Oklahoma. Then my brother went to Nebraska. Those are the top three running backs in the country coming out of high school.
That's amazing.
And he got hurt. He played in an All-Star game, sprained his ankle. And back then, they couldn't fix tendons like they can do, like Steph Curry, for instance. His ankle's fixed.
Right.
You know?
Couldn't do that
in the
then.
70s, back in the 70s, they couldn't do those type of things. So he had to play on a bum ankle throughout his whole career at Nebraska. and he signed as a free agent to Buffalo Bills, and they released him, but then he didn't have desire to keep going. But he was one of the best running backs in the country, man. He was amazing. And so I just fell into that, man.
That is so funny. And when you get to a team that has won the Super Bowl 2 years before, obviously you could tell that the talent is there. And talk a little bit about some of your teammates and what was your first thought?
The one thing about when you go to teams like that, you have to bring something to the table.
Yes, you do.
So out of high school, I always learned that, the team was bigger than me. And that was my high school coach, Jim Fox, told me, the team is bigger than you. It's not about you. It's about the team. That's how I made that decision my senior year, going to my senior year at Nebraska. It's the team is bigger. We only lost one game that year. So I say, if it's going to help our team win, so be it. I'll play fullback to block for Mike Rozier. Okay, and then that was my senior year now. And I go into Nebraska, and then I watched the 49ers, and I said, well, I got to bring something to the table. And we almost went to the Super Bowl my rookie year.
Yeah, you went to the NFC Championship game.
Absolutely. We played against Washington Redskins, and they had these phantom pass, two pass interferences they called on our guys. And, we couldn't figure out, who did it. They didn't show that it was pass interference, so I don't know what happened with that, but I'm not going to go into that. But the Redskins went on and played against the Raiders, and, Marcus had a hell of a game that day, But I guess they didn't want two California teams in the Super Bowl playing in the East Coast, that's all.
So at the time that you came in, you were the first guy to catch for 1,000 yards and run for 1,000 yards, were running backs not catching the ball that much out of the backfield?
No, back in the 80s, no, they weren't that many backs that were doing, all-purpose backs. They're just pure runners, like Eric Dickerson, Earl Campbell, Gerald Riggs. These guys are just pure runners.
Right.
Yeah. And so they didn't catch the ball like that, like I did. I was the first running back to catch 500 balls. No one even talks about that,
Wow.
I was the first running back to catch over 500 passes, And I did 1,000, all that. But, the big thing for me, I like to be all-purpose back because I like to be able to do a lot of different things to help my team win. I do whatever necessary to help our team, get that W. And a lot of times I took hits, for my teammates.
Sure.
I would sell a fake, and I would get my helmet knocked off. I sell it so hard. But, that was part of being one heartbeat. You got to be one heartbeat to help your other teammates win. So, I might take the hit and get my helmet knocked off, but Jerry Rice, John Taylor, or Dwight Clark, or Freddie Solomon, they just scored a touchdown, though, because the defense collapsed on me thinking I had the ball. I faked that well. Joe Montana and I worked on faking every day after practice. That was a big part of our system. So I had to sell that fake, man. If I didn't sell that fake, I felt like I messed up the play.
And if you do sell the fake, it means they're going to beat the crap out of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I got to get ready to take that hit, man. like take a punch for your friend, man, in the mouth.
Wow. So in January 85 Super Bowl, you score 3 touchdowns, and guys beat the Dolphins. When you look back at your career, do you look at that as your greatest day?
No, my greatest day, I would say, the year that it was a challenging year when we were 6-5, and people were booing us, and media came down on us, and we took ownership of our team. We just said, hey. Kick the coaches out. Let's take ownership of our team. So we had some leaders get up and talk. Ronnie, Joe, Jerry, myself. We all had a team meeting and saying we got to win four out of the next 5 games. How are we going to do this? The coaches were like, we kicked Bill Walsh out. He was out of the room. That was one of my favorite Super Bowls of all times because that's when we had a lot of adversities, had injuries and things, but other players had to step up to the plate, And so, we called this meeting and we just started pointing out people what they need to do, And some young guys was partying too hard, They're hanging out. Stay out of the streets,
Right.
Study your playbook, You know, we did a lot of different things like that. And, we won those four games out of the next five. I mean, we won them big, too. And then the first game we played against was, Minnesota Vikings.
Right.
And we blew them out. You know, I had a big-time 80-yard run at the end of the game. It just closed the game right there. Then we go to Chicago, and it's 35 below wind chill factor. and they're talking about, oh, these 49ers are sissies. They can't play in this cold. We kicked their butts, 23-0. Okay, then we go in, and what kept us warm was if we win, we go to Miami. So that's the only thing that kept us warm.
I love that.
So we won the game, went to Miami, and we were underdogs until the last 3 minutes left in the game. And Joe Montana worked his magic all the way down the field with 3 minutes left in the game. We marched about 80 yards down the field. We scored and won the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 23. We won it.
That's so cool. When you look back at Joe Montana, what made him great?
Well, I think, you know, he was just a quiet leader. He wasn't one of the guys that liked to talk, but
right.
When he talked, he was like, you know, E.F. Hutton, they listen. Everyone listened, man.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But he was a quiet guy, and he worked his butt off. Like, you know, we all work. We all have work ethics. It's all about work ethics. And that's how I would run 80 yards every time I touched the ball in practice. I don't care if it was a routine pass, 5-yard pass. I'm taking the 80 yards. You know, if it was just a routine run, I'm running 80 yards. I wanted to make it a habit because if I got in the game, I wanted to be a habit that, you know, is that I'm normal, that I do this every day in practice. So Joe worked hard, Jerry, Ronnie, you know, go on and on. All the guys, man, they had great work ethics. And that's what really helped us be, you know, figure out, you know, what kind of players that we're going to be in life after football. You know, because, you know, a lot of my teammates are very successful.
Absolutely.
You know,
yep.
You know, Joe Montana has a private equity. Ronnie Lott, Steve Young has a big private equity. You know, HGGC. Just Google it up.
Right.
HGGC. And I work for a software company. I've been with TIBCO for 20 years. I'm in business development and vice president of business development. You know, because I started off in marketing to sales to the vice president, you know, of business development and just taking the company to another level and just having fun, you know, enjoying, you know, doing things for our team, you know, and our customers. And you know, we understand a lot of it is all about, understanding what your roles are and understanding culture, you know, that you built, you know. And where we have a great CEO, Murray Rhodes, mm-hmm. You know, he's been with the company for 26 years. I've been with the company for 20 years, you know, Murray has done a great job of showing his leadership, and because he's been through it all. He's been a CIO, CFO, you name it. He's been through it all the way to CEO. So he understands the culture very well, and our team does. So, I mean, so that's how we built, you know, our culture with the 49ers back in the day, you know. And you know, whoever came to our team, they had to adapt to how we played the game, not how they want to play the game. It's a team thing. You know, it's all about the team at the end of the day. You know, and so, you know, it's not about you. And it was so it was really funny. One of my sales guys, you know, he won this award of, you know, he had the most, you know, revenue and everything.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things he said was, you know, it's not about me. It's about my team. The engineers, I was like, oh my gosh, I teared up.
He got it.
After he spoke, I went up to him and gave him a hug, man. I said, that was some awesome things that you said. It touched me, man, because that's how I think. You know?
Well, that's when you look at businesses, just like a team, if you've got people working in silos where the sales guys are not talking to the biz dev the biz dev guys aren't talking to programs, and you've got you've got to integrate. Everybody's got to work together.
You have to integrate, and you have to, you know, be on one page, man. You know, and be one heartbeat. That's the key. You know, and give engineers they're just due, because the engineers open up holes for our sales guys to look pretty on stage with all that revenue. You know,
no question.
It's just like the offensive line; they make the offense, they make the running backs look good. They make the they make the quarterbacks look good. You know, so give them their just due. And I used to take all my linemen out to dinner. you know, every Monday. And then, and if I made All Pro, guess what? I buy them a gift. You know,
nice.
I give them a good gift, man. Well, one of the gifts I bought them was, you know, John Ayers and all those guys. They love to go hunting, right? You know, so I bought them Browning Satori shotguns, 14 karat gold, over under, you know, as a collective item. And the gun's worth over $100,000+ right now.
Wow.
You know? I did my research and went and did something really special, and I put a plate. I put this plate on there saying, thank you for helping me rush for 1,000 yards and receive for 1,000 yards in the same season. Put that little plaque on there.
I love
it. And so it's really cool, man.
So, Bill Walsh, obviously, I read a lot about him when he was an assistant at Cincinnati with Paul mm-hmm. Brown. And, you know, he created that, what now is called the West Coast offense, really, because he
had
a...
The whole league is running our system.
Exactly. Everybody's running the system. And he created it because he had a quarterback, Vince Carter, who couldn't throw very far, but he could throw accurately. So he's like, and they had no running backs and no linemen. So it was like, hey, well, let's just throw short. And that led to him coming to San Francisco and then creating the system there. What was it about him that made him the legend that he became?
Well, you know, he had a system that he ran, and he was tough, man. He didn't take any crap from any player. You know, the players respected him. Trust me.
Yeah.
You know, you never talk back to Bill Walsh, and Bill Walsh created this culture that a lot of teams are benefiting throughout the league right today in the millennium. Tom Brady has definitely used our system and took it to another level. You know, the West Coast offense, he's been in, well, he's played in 8 Super Bowls and been in about 20-something playoffs.
You're right.
You know, this guy is amazing. But, you know, the West Coast offense wins championships. Drew Brees won with it. You had Tom Brady. What's the guy, the quarterback from the Rams back in the day?
Oh, you mean the quarterback now?
Yeah. No. Before
Jared Goff? Not before Jared Goff.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm throwing a blank. But Matty Ryan, guys run. They run our systems.
They all do. Trubisky, all these guys are running. Everybody's running the system.
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
You know, all those guys, man. They all run our system. Everyone runs the West Coast offense. The West Coast offense wins championships. You know. And by using that means your team has to be unselfish. You know, they gotta be able to, you know, be one heartbeat. You know, that's the only way the West Coast offense works, is being one heartbeat.
When did you know? Because you were in the playoffs every year. You were in football, I think.
Raiders. I never missed a playoff. 11 consecutive playoffs.
That's amazing. And as a running back,
that's even after I left the 49ers.
I know, Raiders and Vikings.
I helped the Vikings, the last two, you know. Yeah.
So when did you know it was time? I mean, 11 years as a running back, the clock is ticking after year 4 or 5.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to be out there, like, limping around. I wanted to retire healthy and you know, feeling good about what I've done over my career, you know, and not just be out there playing just to get the yards, you know, being selfish. To me, that's being selfish, to play the game to get yards, you know, and things like that. You know, that's not cool. You know, what's cool is when you bring something to the table and you help teams go to the playoffs, then you bring some legacy to it, to the game, you know. And a lot of times guys play to get the yards and all that. I'm not an individual type of, you know, player like that. You know, if it's going to hurt your team for me to get some yards, that's not cool. You know, I want to win. I'm used to winning. I never lost in my life.
Wow.
You know.
That's true. You played in Nebraska.
I won championships in high school in Nebraska. I only lost 4 games out of my 4 years there. 4 total games.
Wow.
You know. So it just shows you, being one heartbeat and understanding what my roles were throughout my whole life, and even in the company, in the corporate world at TIBCO Software, they definitely understand what I do, you know, for a lot of the customers and for my teammates.
So you also learned from Walter Payton something
Walter Payton was the man.
Never lose your endurance.
Never. He told me to never lose my endurance. He said, take 2 weeks off. And that's what I did. I took 2 weeks off. And basically, you know, I would go on vacation with my family. And I figure out what I want to do, what kind of goals I want to accomplish that next year. And so I had to get my mind and body ready to train for those three seasons in one season. See, a lot of guys, I bet you I can talk to a lot of millennials right now and say, do you understand what three seasons, one season mean? I don't think they understand it that well.
No.
Three seasons, one season, your first eight games is your first season. Your second eight games is your second season. Then you have the playoffs. So you have to train your mind and body to understand through that time of, you know, when things come up, you got to be ready, you know. So your first eight games, you're not like all burnt out and then you hit a wall. You're still rising. You're rising through that second season, and then you rise even higher in the third season. That's why we played so well in the playoffs, you know, because 15 guys used to train with me. You know,
really?
They used to train with me in the off season. We used to run hills and trails, everything. Yeah, Jerry Rice, all of them.
Wow! And where did you guys train?
We trained at we trained at Menlo Park at the college right there. But we ran up in the trails to do all of the, you know, the endurance running. The first 3 months, we would run three times a week. You know, in the trails and at Edgewood Park. And that's in San Carlos, you know.
Yeah.
And then we would run, you know, Hutter Park, you know, Rancho San Antonio Park. We run that. We just switched up, you know. But we'd run them three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then we would lift every day, you know, Monday, Wednesday, you know, three times, yep, you know, upper body, two times, you know, lower bodies on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And but we would run three times a week for about a month and a half. We don't even do any sprints or anything. And then we would go to the track after about two and a half months. We would run like 400-meter workouts, 300-meter workouts, you know. And then as we get closer to training camp, we condense it down even more, and we run pyramids of 100s, 80s, 60s, 40s, 20s, and we would have like 30 seconds rest in between, you know, each run, you know, just like we're just gearing our bodies up for you know, the run plays.
Right.
The run plays, you know, for training camp. You know, so we were so excited, man. I'm telling you, man, we did this for years. And not just a football player has worked out with me. Barry Bonds came out and trained with me. Mitch Richmond came out and trained with me. Eddie George came out and trained. Barry Sanders, rookie year, he came out and trained with me. Barry Sanders' agent called me and asked, could he train with me? Because he saw the article in Sports Illustrated, No Pain, No Gain. Look
right.
It up.
Yeah.
Sports Illustrated, No Pain, No Gain. He read that article, and he wanted to train with me. I said, sure, he can come out and train with us. Yeah, Barry Sanders and his brother came out and trained with me his rookie year. And we made the Pro Bowl that same year. How cool was that?
I love that. And so we're
cool is that? You know, we both made the Pro Bowl that his rookie year. He made it, and I made it, you know. So it was really cool, man.
Now, I can't imagine other teams, because this isn't – there's no coaches there. You guys are doing this on your own.
Bill Walsh, trust me. He trusted me. He trusted me, man, to work with these guys. And then in training camp, we wouldn't go two days. We would have practice in the morning, had a great big practice in the morning, and afternoon we would just meet.
Because you guys were all in shape already.
We're in shape. Half of my guys were in shape, worked training with me. Keena Turner, Eric Wright, Mike Wilson, Jeff Fuller, they all worked out with me.
That's so cool. And so obviously you're an endurance guy. Before your career was over, so the transition from football to running marathons was basically it's still a different gig. It's a different gig because you're going from fast twitch to slow twitch, aerobic.
The reason why I run marathons.
Yeah,
I did a lot of work with San Francisco PD. They made me a solo. I was their fifth. I did a lot of charity work after I retired from ball. You know, so they made me a solo, and I was number six on and they only have like only 8 or 10 of these, you know, in over 100 years. But they honored me with being one of them.
What's a solo mean?
It's like an award they give you, but you're part of their family.
Oh, I got it. Okay,
you're part of their family. Yeah, and you can Google it up, man. A solo, you know, and they have my number. I'm number six.
That's cool.
On the list.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to do something really spectacular with them. You know, so I did a lot of charity work, and so they wanted me to do a 15-mile run to raise money for Special Olympics.
Yeah.
And so basically, I said, "Wow, man, I never ran that far. All I ran was like 4 miles." Because, you know, the trails is like 4 miles long.
Right.
He said, I said, can you give me a couple of months so I can train, you know, to run 15 miles, you know? And they said, sure. You know, we'll give you, a couple of months. And so they gave me a couple of months, and I was ready, man. I was ready to go. So, you know, they had two officers next to me who ran marathons and kind of coaching me, right? And so we finished under 2 hours and 50, you know, under 2 hours, we finished, you know, the 15 miles.
Yep.
And I'm like, wow, man, I feel good. I feel like I can run 11, you know, 11 more miles. I feel like I can run, you know, I just felt good. I thought, I'm going to run a marathon, you know. That's how I got into running marathons. I ran over 40-something marathons, man.
And then, so your first marathon, though, yeah, when you finished it, you're feeling a little down, right?
And
what'd you ask Frank Shorter?
Yeah,
ask Frank Shorter.
Frank Shorter, yeah.
Why am I feeling down? He's like,
Yeah, Frank Shorter, he was right there, right? You're right.
And
absolutely.
He said,
So, you know, when I, you know, did that, man, you know, I was like, wow, I finished it, you know, and he helped me a lot, too. And so basically, I wanted to run some more.
Right.
So I ran San Diego, you know, not San Diego, but my first marathon was San Diego.
Yeah, Rock and Roll San Diego, 409.
I went to Phoenix.
Rock and Roll Arizona.
Yeah, the Rock and Roll Arizona, right? And I did that one. Then I said, I want to bring this to the Bay Area.
That's right. And you helped create Rock and Roll San Jose.
So basically, I went to San Francisco first. They didn't buy into it. You know, so I went to San Jose, and then they saw how successful it was. Then San Francisco called me back. You know, Mayor Lee called me and said, we want to do that Rock and Roll Marathon. I was like, there's a lot of revenue coming in. That's why, right? You know?
Exactly.
So I had a lot of my races were over like 25,000 people that ran in a race, man. It was amazing. Brought a lot of revenue to the city and notoriety to there's been 3 world record broken.
On that Rock and Roll San Jose. Oh, it's a fast course.
Meb Keflezighi broke the master record,
yep.
And he broke the regular record, you know, and then Dina Castor broke the 5K record.
Yes. Yeah.
So all 3 of those was broken on that course.
Now, are you still involved with that race?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, they did a documentary on me. It's called, you know, the Rock and Roll, you know, just Google up, you know, Rock and Roll Marathon documentary, my name. And you can see they did, and all these leaders talk on there. Meb Keflezighi talk on there, you know, Sam Liccardo, some of my teammates talk on there. It's really neat, man. They did a really good job of, you know, of honoring me for bringing that race to San Jose.
So
it was really cool.
I bet as somebody who'd been a team guy, besides track and field, you've been a team guy forever, playing 11
years
of NFL. So the difference, now you're on your own. You're running on your own. Did you like that?
I love it. I love it, man. You know, the main thing is I try to create team wherever I go, whether it's with fans or whatever. You know, I give them a lot of, you know, time, you know, and I just believe in helping people. And I'm working with the 49ers right now with the 49er Fit.
Yes.
You know, Mark Mastrove, he's like, he's owned 24-Hour Fitness. So he teamed up with 49ers, and he wanted to create these gyms where, you know, so fans could interact with the, you know, with the athletes.
Wow.
And kind of train like professionals.
Yeah.
Train like the pros. How to train like the pros, you know? And so these gyms are going to be all over the Bay Area. The first one was in Saratoga, and Mark Mastros, you know, he started all these, and it's really neat, man. It's really neat to be a part of it. You know, Roger Hacker, You know, he asked me if I wanted to be an ambassador. I said, sure, I'd be happy to.
Yeah.
Be happy to, man. You know, and the gyms are really cool, man. They're really cool. You know, so that's gonna really take off. You know.
And your marathon PR, 3:46 still?
Well, you know, the Golden Heart Fun Run, that's one that I'm involved in with Ronnie Lott and Ron Ferrari.
Yep.
And Eddie DiBarlo created this fund, you know, for retired guys that might have trouble with paying bills later in life, or a widow might not be able to, you know, have the money to bury the husband, a former player, you know. So now there's a fund that they can go to. And so the Golden Heart Fun Run, we ran it last year, but this year it got canceled because
of
the smoke, all the fires and stuff, you know. So I'm really passionate about that too, you know. So that day when they canceled it, there's probably about, I don't know, 200 or 300 people came, and I took pictures with them and, you know, signed autographs, and you know, so it was really neat, man. But you know, next year we're gonna go all out again and have some fun. And Ron Ferrari is doing a really good job of hosting these things, and Jay York is also involved in it too. You know, he also put some money in it. They put seven figures in, both of those guys.
Wow.
Eddie and Jed put seven figures to start this Golden Heart Fund, you know, foundation thing. It's really cool.
I love it. So one of my favorite stories is you're running a marathon and you're trying to set a PR. And you're some guy, you catch a guy, and you're running, and he cramps.
You know, I'm running in Chicago in this race, in Chicago, and I'm running great. I'm like, wow, man, I'm running real good time. I'm gonna beat my time, you know, I can feel it. And then some fan came up to me and said, you know, can I run with you this last few miles? I said, sure, man, come on, run with me. So he's running with me, he started cramping up. And I'm like, oh, shoot, should I stop and walk with them or should I keep going? I'm like, I'm going to stop and walk with them.
You're a team guy.
I'm a team guy. And so I walked with them, and my time wasn't that bad, but, you know, he told his family, they came over and gave me a hug. But check this out. In a documentary, there's a girl that runs in a race.
Yeah.
She's like 16 or 17 years old, and I saw her crying. I was like, no one's gonna be crying on my clock. Now this is my race.
Yeah.
You know, did somebody do something to you? I was like, I was gonna.
I'll take him out. Who was that?
I was gonna run him down. She said, no one did anything to me. I have bad shin splints, and my family's at the finish line, and I got four more miles to go. You know, and he said, I don't think I can do it. I'm like, young lady, today's your lucky day. I'm going to push you these last 4 miles. And they had the camera on me. I told them to turn the camera off. I said, I'm going to push you these last 4 miles. And so we ran the last 4 miles, and we finished under 2 hours like she wanted. And she went and told her family. They all came over, gave me a hug. They interview her on the documentary.
Yeah.
And I cry every time I see it, because you have to understand, you know, well, you know, at that time it was touching, you know, to know, you know, that, you know, you help somebody to push themselves and to, you know, take their work to another level, you know. I mean, because I mean, she was done. She was like, she was so afraid that she wasn't going to finish the race because the family's all waiting for her at the finish line.
That's,
you know,
so cool.
And I helped her get through it.
Yes,
and
she did.
And she finished under 2 hours like she wanted, an hour and 50 minutes. She did it, you know, and I told her, keep her head down, think of being on the beach, just think of just positive stuff, you know, just clear your head from all the pain and stuff, and, you know, blow, you know, breathe easy, just, I coached her all the way through until she finished. It was so cool, man.
Was it hard for you, you know, like, again, you're 11 years, this is a family, every year you're with these guys, you know, 24/7, basically, and going from that to, you know, not really knowing at that point what you're going to do, and you're not having that same family as your profession and the endorphins that go with being a professional football player.
I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah.
It wasn't hard. You know why? Because Bill Walsh prepped us for that. Bill Walsh brought in professors from Stanford to talk to us to figure out what we want to do with our lives. That's why our guys are so successful. All the players on our team that I played with are so successful. Harris Barton, Brent Jones. Yeah, I can go on and on and on. You know, they've done well. They went to the next level in the corporate environment.
Yeah.
It's so, you know.
We were prepared. You were coached.
We learned a lot. We prepared ourselves for that as an athlete, you know, what it takes to win, how to win with each, you know, helping each other out, you know, being one heartbeat, you know, understanding our culture of what we have to do to get the job done. You have to bring something to the table. That's what you do in the corporate environment. You bring something to the table. You don't come in thinking that you're all almighty and hot and this and that, you know. No, you come in to help bring something to the table where you're going to, you know, make that revenue every quarter. You know, that's what's important, you know.
What were some? Give me one moment. Not so much. We already talked greatest game and everything. Was there a couple of moments that really stick out to you in your career? Just moments that meant a lot to you, and it might not have nothing to do with scoring touchdowns or winning Super Bowls. Just moments that meant a lot to you.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of moments that meant a lot to me. How we come together as one heartbeat of, you know, like Dwight Clark.
Yes.
You know, Dwight Clark. You know, he's one of my favorite guys. We loved him so hard, and we had his back all the way to his last breath.
Yeah.
You know, that's family. That's culture. That's understanding your culture. Understanding that you stand by somebody that you know, all the way. He's sick with ALS, but we want to make his life comfortable.
Right.
And all the way to the end, and that's what we. And Eddie DiBartolo taught us a lot of that, man, because he's you know, he's Italian, got the family mentality, that Italian family stuff, you know. So
exactly.
So it helps us. It teaches us, man. Eddie taught us a lot of values, good values in life in general, you know, how to take care of people and things like that. That's important, man, in life. And so a lot of times athletes don't get that, you know. But we're blessed to have. You know, Bill Walsh, Eddie DiBartolo, John McVay, and, you know, Jerry Walker, all these guys, man, these guys are great leaders, you know.
I love
great
that.
Leaders, man.
So, running goals, do you have any running goals now? You're running half marathons?
No, I'm finished with the goals with the running. I just want to just have fun with it, you
yes,
know?
Exactly.
I ran over 40-something marathons, man.
Wow.
It's crazy, man. I mean, because I ran all over. I did Chicago, I ran like Seattle, San Diego, Phoenix.
Yeah.
I've been all over. Denver.
When are we going to get you on a bike and in some goggles and doing a little triathlon? Come on now.
I don't know if I want to get on a bike, man, because I crashed on the Harley once. You know? I was trying to be cool, and I went to a turn too fast, and it kind of slipped out of me. You know, hit some oil. I'm like, I'm scared of bikes, man.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Hey, Roger, this has been such a treat for me to get chat with you.
Thank you so much, man.
You're really, really fun. next time I'm up in the Bay Area, We'll have to go grab lunch. That would
let's
be really
it,
fun. I love it.
Let's get together. And there's something else, too, I'd like to tell you, man. I sit on the advisory board of this company called Sports Thread. They're based out of Denver.
Uh-huh.
And so we help athletes, high school athletes, get scholarships, you know. And a lot of them are, you know, inner city kids.
Love
you know,
it.
That really have a hard time, you know, getting recognized. And so they put their videos and stuff on this website, Sports Thread's website. It's like LinkedIn.
Yep.
So, you know, basically it's like a video of them and put their GPA and what they like to do in life in general, you know, what they want to study and all that stuff is put on this website where college coaches can
Very cool.
and recruiters can look at it and see. And there's been so many scholarships that have been given. We got over 1 million kids. You know, and so I'm telling you, man, it's amazing.
I love that.
Sports Thread. Look it up, man.
You know what's fascinating? So we've got our charity, Challenge Athletes Foundation, which I started 25 years ago. We've raised over $100 million and sent out over 23,000 grants. We buy prosthetics, wheelchairs, hand cycles. And every once in a while, we had a young man named Hunter Woodhall, who is a, 46-second quarter miler, is a double baloney amputee.
Wow.
And he was getting no scholarship offers. He was like ranked top five in the country.
That is
and then, Tracy Sundlin, I called Tracy, and Tracy had Hunter come to his indoor track meet in New York, and Hunter ended up getting a big article in New York Times. Next thing you know, he's running in Arkansas.
I love it.
That's exactly
it. I love it, man. That's
opportunity.
What I'm talking about, man.
Opportunity. That's what it is.
It's not what you do on the football field. It's what you do off the field. That's what's important, and that's my whole motto. It's not what I did on the ball on the football field anymore. It's what I'm doing off the field. So I'm trying to touch a lot of people, a lot of lives, you know, with all these platforms.
Hey, if you're around, and we're going to have a gala actually at the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art on, I think it's Wednesday night, February 27th. If you're in town, I'd love to have you come as my guest.
Oh, man, I would love to try. You know, I'm supposed to do this event down in San Diego around that time. It's a company that they're doing like a moderated talk about corporate culture about me making that transition, you know.
Love
so
it.
It's a big deal. So I think I'll be down there.
I think you will. We'll do it another time.
Yeah, catch me another time, man. I'd love to do it, bro.
Roger Craig has been our guest, a true legend. We're talking again. 3 Super Bowl rings, 73 touchdowns, 8,189 yards rushing, 4,911 receiving in the 49ers Hall of Fame, NFL the 80s All-Decade Team. What the hell? When are we getting into the NFL Hall of Fame? Well, what are they waiting for?
I'm waiting on, man, but you know, I'm having fun. I'm letting you know. I hope they know. I hope they don't think that I'm mad at them, because I'm not. Because I'm having too much fun, you know, helping people.
You're doing great.
And changing people's lives, man. That's all I care about.
Love it. Roger Craig has been our guest. Again, we're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, Velofix.com, Polar, Blood, Sweat, and Data, thecaliforniatriathlon.org. They've got their event, Viking Dash, coming up on April 7th. And our Challenge Athletes Foundation sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million. Keep challenge athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on BabbittVille.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.